bloody awesome. 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 Good morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are in the world, and welcome to the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. My name is Matt Hudson from What I Watch Tonight, and joining me as ever from across that big old pond, he's my transatlantic movie brother and the statesman to my kingsman, it's John Burke from Burke Reviews. How are you, my friend?
I am doing very well, Matt. Looking forward to getting into some movie talk today.
Same here, mate. It's Tuesday evening for me. It's one of the highlights of my week, is sitting down talking new releases, or just film, on air and off air, and donuts and coffee with my good buddy John. How is Florida keeping in the last week?
We are struggling to accept the reality of the world we're living in. But you know, some government employees are in denial about the pandemic that we're living in, and people are wearing less masks and
say it ain't so.
It's so frustrating, but you know, it is what it is.
Yep, I hear that. Same over here. It seems to be all going to pot, depending on where you are in the country. We have different tiers now of COVID. The people up north, they're high risk, and where I am is kind of medium, apart from 10 miles down the road is apparently high risk, but I'm fine. I don't understand. But that's why things like the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast exist, and exist in this time to make us happy and to make our listeners happy, because otherwise we'd all be going mental. And whilst film is a bit more limited in terms of releases, they are still releasing mainly streaming. So if you are new to the BAMP, as we call it, what myself and John do each week is we take what we deem to be the biggest release of the week, or the most interesting, and we give you a non-spoiler review, our opinions on the film. And as mentioned, obviously, with what's happening in the world, we are pretty much turning to streaming and have been for the last 6 months or 7 months. And tonight is no different. Whereas last week we covered one of the films from Welcome to the Blumhouse, we're doing the same this week as well. And we're covering Nocturne, which was directed by Zhu Quirk and also written by Zhu Quirk. And it stars Sydney Sweeney, Madison Eisman, Jack Colliman, Ivan Shaw, Julie Benz, Rodney Toe, John Rothman and Janelle Kennedy. And the synopsis reads, an incredibly gifted pianist makes a Faustian bargain to overtake her older sister at a prestigious institution for classical musicians. Sounds scary. Well, we'll wait and see. 56 on Metascore, 5.6 IMDb user rating, and Rotten Tomatoes 60% for the critic rating. So across the board, the reviews coming in aren't glowing, but of course, we'll give our thoughts. If you want to watch the film, as are all the Welcome to the Blumhouse films, they're on Amazon Prime, all internationally, all around the world, released on the same day, same time. So check out Amazon Prime for those films. Now, Nocturne, last week we covered The Lion, Black Box, and my kind of overarching thoughts about both of them was they were fine. One of them was better than the other, Black Box, but there was something missing, like a spark or an energy or just something to kind of tip them over the edge from good films to, you know, very good, very decent films. And Nocturne is similar for me. In fact, I did enjoy Nocturne more than both of last week's films. I haven't seen Evil Eye yet, so I can't comment, but for me, Nocturne is the best of the Welcome to the Blumhouse releases so far, but it was lacking something. In terms of the story and what it's about, it's asking you what lengths you're going to go to reach greatness. So not too dissimilar to Black Swan, but it's not as impactful and it does take different story beats. So you can compare it in terms of what the overarching theme is. But in this case, though, it's a sibling rivalry between Juliet, played by Sydney Sweeney, and Vivian, who's Madeline Eisman. They aim to go on to greater things after their musical academy stint is over. She's going to Juilliard. Juliet isn't. Both sisters, in their final performance, are playing the same piece, or they're going to, which caused a bit of friction. And in terms of characterisation, it's not entirely opposite, but it might as well be. Juliet, she's a talented pianist, but Vivian, she's like a next level up. Vivian's got a boyfriend. She's an outgoing personality. Juliet doesn't have a boyfriend, and she's a bit more introverted. And the whole film just talks about the effects of stress and pressure and the toll on your mental health of striving for perfection. There's some good mystery, good tension. There is an atmosphere throughout the film, which I appreciated. Not everything makes sense, though. Some elements I thought were a bit rushed and were given a fairly short shrift in order to just to get the story moving, because it's only a 90-minute long movie, which is exactly what the film needs, because any longer would have been potentially stretching it. But at the same time, I did feel like the film kind of went at too brisk a pace in certain areas. I think Zuckwerk could have elaborated on certain plot points a little bit more. But Sydney Sweeney, I think, is wonderful in this. I think Sydney Sweeney is great in this, how she straddles the emotional lines she's asked to do. She's the standout. Madison Eisman's very decent as well, but Sydney Sweeney is excellent, I think. The ending's going to frustrate a lot of people, I think. And It's certainly not bad. There's a few giallo influences in terms of how the story, some of the tropes and the use of colours in how, in relation to some of the events and emotions on screen. But it's not bad. In fact, like I said, I think it's got a nice understated creepiness to it. It isn't going to blow the doors off my best of 2020 list, though there aren't many films out this year, so actually it may do. It's the best of the three Blumhouse films I've seen. And from what I hear about Evil Eye, this will probably still be the best of the four. But I liked it. I wasn't blown away by it. I liked the creepiness and the atmosphere. I loved Sydney Sweeney in it. I like Sydney Sweeney anyway. But it's lacking something for me. It was a bit convoluted. It just needed something else. But what did you think, my friend?
I also felt like it was missing something. Although I did also like it. I think I like Black Box a little more collectively. This though did immediately once like the story of like this pursuit of perfection, it got me thinking of like Black Swan. Yeah. And also Whiplash, although Whiplash isn't going for horror, but Black Swan definitely has that in there. And I like that. I think that that's a inherently compelling story, right? These people who are really good at something competing to be the best at something. And so that part really resonated. I do feel like some of the character behavior feels like it comes kind of from nowhere, and I don't think it does a good job of letting that motivation really be clear.
I think I know which part you mean as well. One part in particular.
Yeah, and I mean, again, some of it is there, but I also severely agree with the performance. I thought they were really, really strong kind of across the board. I liked the characters, even the ones who are doing things that you're like, oh, why would you do that? Like, I'm still like, okay, well, I still get what they're going through. Like, I see the connection. And I thought Sydney Sweeney was very good. Madison Eisman, who I believe is in the Jumanji movies.
She is, yes. And Goosebumps, yeah, I think, as well.
Right. And I vaguely remember Goosebumps, but you know, she's worked with Jack Black a couple times is apparently the lesson we should take from that. But I thought overall it was really good. It did. I was trying to connect it because I think this falls more in vain with like a Suspiria.
Yes.
Type of horror film. Not necessarily exactly the same, but in that kind of
top, isn't it?
Right. And you know, even the boarding school kind of element of it is there. I mean, obviously we could probably pull and stretch it at, and I don't love Suspiria like other people do, but I whatever was missing in Suspiria, I thought was a little more prevalent here. Cause I was more connected, but it should be noted, Big Tuna highly recommended this film. On his site, he gave it a 4.5 out of 5. And I don't think it's that strong. Like, I think it's good. I think there's some really good performances, but for me, it's not that great of a horror film. And what I will say to both Black Box and this, is that neither are what I initially think of when I think of horror, and what I think a lot of your casual audiences would also say. Like, there's not jump scares, and I don't need that anymore. But my brain still kind of has like that default, like horror movies are monsters and jump scares.
When you've got the Blumhouse name ahead of it, and you kind of think of some of the other films they produced, you wouldn't be blamed for thinking that.
No, but then again, there's like Get Out, and they definitely have a really wide mm-hmm. style of their horror films. And so, not a criticism in any way, just I think that for your casual moviegoer, you might come into this thinking, oh, good, a horror movie, and be shocked. Now, this one does have some things in it that are more in vain with the genre, I think, traditionally, but still, like, I never felt threatened, I guess, like, while I was watching it. Like, I was creeped out by certain things, for sure. There were things that were that put me on edge, and Sweeney's performance is intense, right? Like, she has some moments where you're just like, wow. But I can't quite put my finger on what felt absent or what was lacking. And I don't know if maybe it was I wanted to feel more dread, or I wanted to be like I think what you said is accurate, where some things do feel rushed, and yet 90 minutes is the right time. Yeah. So it's like, I don't know how to weave it better or to leave something out. Like, I don't know if there's really anything I would have left out. But overall, I definitely think it's very good, and it looks good. And this was the first feature, I think, for the director.
Yes, it is, yeah.
So, you know, that's a heck of a first outing, I would say.
No, you're right. And we said it last week as well about the Welcome to the Blumhouse stable. They're not traditional horror, and they never were really marketed as that. It was kind of all of our collective idea that that's what they would be, but they're kind of more psychological or thriller based, some of them, especially something like The Lie. And Evil Eye, from what I understand, again, is more sort of supernatural, trauma basis for, I believe. So it's not your straight up horror film, and I don't need straight up horror. It would have been nice to have, like, maybe one of them be more of horror, traditional horror fare, just to shake up the stable of films a bit. But we do have four more coming in January, I believe. But to be honest, though, over the spooky season, I do prefer an atmospheric film. Don't get me wrong, I love a gore fest, and I love a slasher as much as the next guys and girls. But if I'm going to watch a film on Halloween, I would rather watch a film which is, you know, more intense, has that atmosphere that kind of makes you look over your shoulder, rather than just like mindless slashing. So these films are more geared toward what I would like to watch, but they're all missing something. And what that is, like we say, it could be a multitude of things. It could be things that just don't need to be in there, which actually disrupt the pacing. It could be something as, you know, to us as frivolous as that, but they're not bad films. None of these films are bad films.
No.
And what Jason Blum has done, and by giving newcomers their start, by having diverse cast, diversity in the behind the camera as well, fabulous. It's a fantastic idea. And the films are decent. But to me, that's as far as they go at the minute. Decent. If I was going to grade Nocturne now, I'd probably give it 7 out of 10 at a push. I think, because again, I don't think it's a bad film. I think it's above average, but it's certainly not on the kind of upper echelons. And I don't think it would be cracking your top marks, would it, John?
No, I do think it is. If we were to just scale it against other Blumhouse releases, I think both of these are really, really great. I mean, obviously, I think like Get Out is far superior. I think Invisible Man, far superior. But like Truth or Dare or Jesus. Fantasy Island, this movie's leaps and bounds above those, right? So I do like that element of it. And I don't know, there was something about this that felt like it was a very high production value. You know what I mean? Like this felt
more like a cinematic
film. It didn't feel like
film.
A streaming. Right. And that's cool, because like, I don't think Fantasy Island felt like a cinematic movie, right? Like, that felt like a TV movie to me.
Crap.
Which, to be fair, that might have been their goal, because it was based on a TV show. Yep. So maybe they want, maybe, but, you know, it didn't help the movie by any means, you know, just being like, okay, yeah, fine. Where this, you know, felt like an indie film, like what I would expect for like this type of, you know, story.
Yeah. I mean, Blumhouse as a production company have got a great list of films that they've produced. Like, even like things like Black Klansman is a film that they produced. But then some, again, you just look at the quality they've put out, the varying quality of the Purge films, things like Hush, going forward a bit more Cam, on Netflix, Split, Whiplash, Us, Get Out, the Halloween, Upgrade was great. Sinister was fine. Happy Death Day. So they have...
I like Happy
Death Day. Yeah, we were at odds on that film, but they've got a very good staple. And I think this film, Nocturne, I would put it in with those films. It wouldn't be at the top of those films, but I'd put it as one of their better films, because when, like a lot of production companies, but when Blumhouse films don't work, they usually are just horrible. Really, like a slog. Like you mentioned, Truth or Dare. I didn't like You Should Have Left with Kevin Bacon recently. And there's a few other of their films which I'm not overly keen on. These films, certainly this one, doesn't fall into that category. It's one of the better films they've done recently. And I agree, the production value seemed quite high. It seemed like one which you would see it cinematically, because what I said last week is that the two films I watched felt very much like streaming films, or like made for TV or no streaming films. I can't imagine watching those on a big screen. This one I could do. I can imagine going to the Picture House in London or one of the smaller indie circuit cinemas up in London and sitting down and watching this. I can't imagine doing that at the other two. Or again, by the sounds of it, Evil Eye, though I haven't seen that. So, but no, I did enjoy this film. I'd recommend watching it. I do think it's the best of the three I've seen so far. But it's definitely a thumbs up from me, man. And Sydney Sweeney is very good in it.
Yep. I say, you know, give it a watch.
It has the book seal approval, a book recommendation. So that is our second Welcome to the Blumhouse review. We'll come back next year and do the rest of them, because I'm not sure cinemas will be open then either. So let's move into our next segment then, which is simply called Chuffed Headlines. And John and myself, we pick a headline which has caught our eye through movies or any kind of pop culture news that we found over the last week, and we just dive into it. It could be fun, it could be somber, it could be serious, it could be groundbreaking, but whatever it is, it's caught our eye. So John, what have you picked for your headline this week?
So the 35th anniversary of Back to the Future is happening, and so there's a new Blu-ray box set coming out. So everyone's talking Back to the Future right now, and Bob Gale, who is a co-writer with Zemeckis on the film, did an interview and talked about two things. Now, to be fair, some of these are not like new stories, but since it was in the news, I thought, hey, let's talk Back to the Future. One of them is that the original ending was going to have Marty in a refrigerator, which that part's been kind of known for a while. The original time machine was going to be a refrigerator, not the DeLorean. But it was they were going to build a whole fake town and blow it up for real, apparently. And that would trigger him to go back in time. Like, that was going to be how he was able to go back, because it was supposed to be nuclear. But remember, we know that it's not nuclear, it's electrical, but it needs a nuclear reaction, you know, to get the 21 point. Wait, something gigawatts. I forget. I'm sorry. I usually know, but right now my brain's like, nope. But then there is
too much.
Yes, there is a reference that the original opening, well, this one's the kind of, but the opening to this film is iconic, and people reference it all the time because it is up there with like Rear Window for visual storytelling. We get so much information in that opening shot. But originally, it was going to start with Marty in detention, and he was going to set off fire sprinklers to get out of detention to escape, and much more like little stinker than Marty is ever in the movie, you know. So glad they cut that, but that was the original opening, and they cut it for budget reasons, and man, did it work in their favor. It's funny how sometimes those limitations actually make better product than what you were originally planning. But yeah, that's the article. It's nothing major, but you know, I love Back to the Future. I actually just got the 30th anniversary box set because it comes with the animated series. And I've been Griffin Newman from the Blank Check podcast has been talking about it. And I was like, man, I really want to see this animated series. So it was on sale on Prime Day. So I picked up the box set. So I got my second Blu-ray copy of the trilogy, and now the DVD of the first, the two seasons of the animated series that I now am going to watch over the next couple of weeks.
I totally agree on what you've just said in terms of how someone like when your hand is forced, sometimes what you come up with is a little bit better. And yeah, I mean, the idea of Marty McFly setting off sprinklers to get out of detention, fine, no problem with that. But then when, if you were going to replace what we have now, then it's, so then you suddenly realise, no, this is chalk and cheese. And as for the ending, again, as soon as you say fridge, nuclear blast, I just think Indiana Jones, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
You know, Spielberg got it from that movie, though, because remember, Spielberg's a producer on Back to the Future.
That's
and
right.
In the article attributes that Spielberg was paying homage to the original ending of Back to the Future with that scene. So,
and it's probably one of the most reviled scenes in that franchise. Well, again, thank goodness for budget cuts. It's always these stories I always find interesting. It's the kind of like what if story, isn't it? Like, what if this didn't happen? What if Zemeckis and Gale had gone for this ending? How do we view Back to the Future now? Because obviously we all know the classic on the strip, they've got to get their car up to the speed. We know it, that the tension in that scene is great with Doc fumbling around. But this, how does this stack up? Obviously it's a great what if. As for the intro is kind of, you know, much or nothing for me, but it's the ending. But hell, it's fun, these stories are to me. They're fun to kind of think, you know, what would it be? Would Back to the Future still be held up as a classic if the ending had been different, or would people be able to overlook it? But I know you love these films almost as much as anyone. Let's just say this was filmed and this was the ending, and try and picture it in your mind. Yeah, but the rest of the movie is like kind of similar. Obviously, they have to change it, but do you reckon it holds up as well?
I don't think so, man. That the whole idea of surviving a nuclear attack in a refrigerator is so preposterous that I'm just like, where did they even come up with that? But
stay in there, please.
And the fact that it was so reviled in Indiana Jones, like it kind of shows that no, like it would be a huge mistake to have done it that way. And also, like, the DeLorean, while we know it failed as an actual car, mm-hmm. that I think actually helps it, because if the DeLorean was like, you know, a car that everybody was driving in the 80s, I don't think it's as cool. It's so cool because it's like they took a car that failed and made it awesome.
It's super, you know, like, cool.
Right. Like, I love the design of that car so much. So, like, if it wasn't the DeLorean, I don't think the movie does nearly as well. Because can you imagine? Like, think of, like, Hot Tub Time Machine's almost also kind of parodying the refrigerator thing, because it's so dumb that a hot tub would be the time machine, right?
Like, I think we're going to make that comparison, but you're right.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, I pull random time travel. I've actually never seen Hot Tub Time Machine. I just assume that it is, in fact, the hot tub that is the time machine based on the title.
I mean, the title, otherwise, it's the most misleading title I've heard.
Right. So, like, you know, what the device looks like is important. Like, realistically, Bill and Ted's shouldn't be as cool as it is, but they made the phone booth work, yeah. Right? Like, that phone booth is cool. And now it's like, for kids, it's like, what is that? It's like, oh boy, you know?
Oh,
like,
Christ, damn, mate. That's a way to age everyone who remembers those films when they came out. But it's also simple, though. It's not, you don't have to, oh yeah, it's like Doctor Who and the TARDIS, isn't it? You still got to imagine this thing can go through time. But whereas the whole fridge, nuclear blast, I mean, how long have you got to stay in the fridge for before you come out and just die of radiation poisoning? Or
what?
Whereas,
and the other thing,
phone box, I can dig that.
You got to wonder too how many like children would have ended up trapped in their refrigerators if that had been the movie. You know what I'm saying? Because
how many idiots
like,
would have thought it was a way to get out of a nuclear explosion was just to basically buy a lead fridge.
I mean, considering they're used to show videos in school to like duck under your desk in the event of a nuclear like bomb, people probably would have bought it. Yeah, so. Good.
No, because it's an interesting thought, but yeah, it doesn't really work, does it? But my headline was like John. There was a few this week that came out, but I've picked this one, and it's the news that Chadwick Boseman, his final on screen appearance, the trailer for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom has been released. It's a Netflix film, which stars Viola Davis alongside Chadwick Boseman. But I just thought I'd mention this again, just to honour the memory of Chadwick Boseman, who, let's not forget, died at age 43, only in August, only 2 months ago, after years and years of battling cancer and putting these films out. And even this film, it'll be the second film he's released in 2020 after the Five Bloods. I like the trailer for this. I don't know if you saw it, but I saw the trailer for this. It looks very decent. It's set in 1920s Chicago and explores race, music at the time, the exploitation of black artists in the industry. And Chadwick Boseman is playing a trumpeteer, a band trumpeteer, a session trumpeteer. He's very ambitious. He wants to have more of a say in Ma Rainey's output, but she's the boss. She in the trailer even said, like, you know, if things going to go how Ma says they're going to go. And it just makes me think of the other film, Ma. But it's so Chadwick Boseman has basically got to decide whether he carries on with this. Does he make a deal with the white music industry figure who's trying to make him a deal to basically say, like, I'll take these songs off your hand, so we can probably guess where that's going to go. I think it looked good. I think it looked good. It's based on a play by August Wilson. It's directed by George C. Wolfe, who's more of a playwright. And it's coming out on Netflix on 18th of December, so a week before Christmas. I like the look of this trailer. I think it looked good. I think it looked like, in terms of capturing the 20s vibe, it looked good. The music looked great. Viola Davis looked like she's going to kill it in this role. And a lot of people are saying that Chadwick Boseman is superb in this film. Now, I've only seen him in the trailer and he looked fine. But have you heard about this film or seen the trailer?
I have not watched the trailer yet. I've been extra bad about watching trailers, or I guess not watching trailers, depending on your perspective, I suppose. Since theaters shut down, because that's usually when I would watch trailers.
I don't usually watch trailers other than in cinema.
Yeah, me too. And occasionally if there's something I'm really like pumped about and I know like I just have to see it kind of thing, but I have not actively sought them out. I am going to watch this one now because I am curious. I'm still excited with just what you read and obviously because it's Boseman. And this does further feel like we're becoming a Netflix podcast, as Netflix seems to be the only way for us to get movies.
Sponsors.
Or at least streaming services in general, which makes me sad, which I do have a quote I'm going to read in a little bit that is very, very relevant. But I'm definitely pumped to see it. It's sad that it's his last movie, but I am glad it's not like being delayed or something like that.
Yeah, and all I can say, like I said, is it looks great. Nobody can comment on how good anyone looks, but the performances look fine. The music sounds boss. Obviously, it's dealing with heavier subjects from 100 years ago now, which sounds crazy, but the 1920s, 100 years ago. So, looking forward to checking that out. And like you say, it's on Netflix, so we're all going to be able to watch it at the same time. And it looks like that's going to be the way forward in terms of watching films, isn't it? So Netflix, Prime, Hulu, HBO, Disney Plus, whatever it might be.
Yeah, that does seem to be the path. On a sadder note, if it's okay to transition, and I guess kind of a related note, we lost Chadwick to cancer. And the dude, Jeff Bridges, announced this week that he's battling lymphoma. He's been very positive, and he actually paraphrased Big Lebowski and said, new has come to light. I'm not going to say, because we don't usually curse on the podcast. But ultimately, being the guy, I'm a huge Jeff Bridges fan. I've become like more and more so over the last couple of years. We've like Corey and I've watched a lot of his movies through Movie Club. Like neither of us had ever seen Starman or The Last Picture Show, Tron even we had not seen until Movie Club. And and then of course his work with the Coens. I'm a big Coen fan, so I love Lebowski and I love True Grit. And we watched Crazy Heart. We've watched, in fact, we did a whole month last year on Jeff Bridges in 2019, where we watched, I think, five of his movies that we had never seen. And I really have come to just enjoy him as a presence. And old Jeff Bridges, we've been getting Cowboy Jeff Bridges, which has been just fantastic. He's so good in that type of role. Even in like RIPD, which is not a movie most people remember, but he's really good in that goofy Men in Black wannabe movie. Yeah, and
when you think Hell or High Water, obviously, when you think of Austin, Jeff Bridges, and that film is just awesome.
But it's sad. Apparently, the prognosis is not super negative, though. And so hopefully he'll be able to extend his life, long enough to beat the cancer and everything. But it's always sad when people you look up to or admire are dead or dying and or diagnosed with such a dangerous and scary illness like cancer. So
obviously we we extend our best wishes to Jeff Bridges and those surrounded closest to him. And I echo everything you've just said. It's never nice to hear. Of course it isn't. It's never nice to hear someone close to you or someone you admire or respect succumb or have this befallen upon them. But if Jeff Bridges says that the current prognosis is good and everything isn't as bad as it could be, then that's a positive. And the fact that he came out with his quote, as the dude would say, you know, he's obviously in decent enough spirits as well, given obviously the awful disease that lymphoma is. So yeah, we certainly hope that he makes a recovery and that we can get to see him back on the silver screen once again, or the small screen at some point soon. But of course, health comes first, isn't it, JB?
Exactly.
So that's what's caught our eye this week. So now we're going to move on to media consumption. And the title kind of says it all, unlike that hot tub time machine, which may or may not be a time machine. It's where myself and John, in amongst doing our show and chatting about pumpkin donuts and pumpkin coffee, we watch other films or catch whatever's on television, play video games, listen to podcasts that aren't ours, read comics or whatever, listen to music. So we basically spend the time now to let each other and you guys know what we've been indulging in to pass the time in the last week. So, John, you've always got a fine selection, so why don't you take us away?
Well, we'll start with my weekly update of the Blank Check podcast. We got Back to the Future 3 was the episode of the week as they're covering Robert Zemeckis, which, of course, is relevant. There is this thing the Blank Check fans, we call the Blank Check Bump, where it seems like at this point in their, I think, the 5-year podcast history, when they are covering a movie, there is suddenly an increase in public awareness of it. Which is weird for me because it seems like no one else knows this podcast unless I've introduced them to it. Yet I see it happen. And like the best example is Amazon Prime will not have the movies that they're covering. And then suddenly, like a week after the episode drops, they have the movie that they were covering. That's happened with both Catherine Bigelow and Jonathan Demme. Like the week after the episode dropped, the movies just showed up on Prime. And I'm like, okay, well, that seems like someone at Prime is monitoring, which makes sense because Griffin Newman was Arthur in the Amazon Tick TV series. Mm-hmm. So coincidence? I think not.
Maybe we could take a cut of their Patreon money. They get enough free publicity.
Maybe. You know, I started playing D&D with my friends a couple of weeks ago. We've only played 2 times so far, but we have a match – or match. I don't know what to call it. We play this week on Friday. It's every other Friday seems to be our current strategy. And another friend had started playing D&D on their own and had suggested I check out this podcast called The Adventure Zone. Nice. And it is the second podcast of a very popular podcast called My Brother and Me, that features the McElroys. Now, I had not heard of that podcast prior to listening to this D&D podcast, but apparently it's pretty popular. So The Adventure Zone, I went all the way back to 2014. I traveled back in my time machine.
Hot tub.
A hot tub. Exactly. And listened to the very first episode of the show. It's a little rough because it's the first episode and like a few of them have never played D&D before. So I totally get that. But I got to say, I just finished the first episode. It's just over 2 hours. It's very funny. The guys seem like genuinely interested in the game, even though most of them had not played before. And the funny thing for me was I looked this morning at when the episode came out because I didn't pay attention when I downloaded it. I just went to the very first episode, you know, download it. And there was an ad, and I was like, that seems weird. Like, it seems very modern. And I know there are some podcast hosts can insert ads, and I'm guessing that's what's happened here. But so I looked, and it was like 2014. I'm like, well, that's only 2 years ago. And it wasn't until the end of the day that my brain clicked. Like, that was 6 years ago, guy. Like, what are you talking about? It was only 2 years ago.
Wow.
That my brain is like, it's only 2016 because, you know, that's before all hell broke loose on the planet. So. And also for us, it's when it kind of started to break loose. But so that I listened to one episode of that, and it's something I think I'm going to continue listening to. But I've watched a bunch of movies compared to a couple weeks ago where I had watched almost nothing. Some of them were for Astrology, our other podcast, and some were for Movie Club. But I watched Bullet last night, the Steve McQueen Not the director, but the actor.
Yes.
Have you ever seen Bullet?
No, I'm going to watch it for the episode as well. We've got a few weeks for that, but I'm going to check that out as well.
Can I ask you a question? And I won't answer the question. I'm not going to answer it.
Go on.
What do you think the name of the movie is referring to?
Annoyingly, I do know, but I have forgotten. Bullet. It's either his name or is it a car or something?
I'm not going to answer. I'm going to let you watch. But okay. I had my thoughts and I was wrong. And that's all I'll say is I was like, oh, I'll be darned. But similar to you, I thought I knew, and maybe I did or didn't, is the lesson here. Corey and I watched, I'm curious to see if you've ever seen this. We watched Eyes Without a Face.
Yes, I have seen it, yes.
Yeah, that we both really enjoyed that movie. Our episode for that came out last week. So listeners, please check out Burke Reviews Movie Cast. I watched The Odd Couple, which I'd seen part of, but apparently I'd never sat through the entire thing. But as a kid, Grumpier Old Men came out. Well, Grumpy Old Men and Grumpier Old Men. And I saw both of those. I'm a fan of Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon. In fact, I am a big fan of Some Like It Hot and The Apartment.
Yeah, The Apartment's great.
I love The Apartment. That is my favorite Lemmon performance. But I really had fun watching The Odd Couple. It doesn't age perfectly, but I think it ages better than I expected in some ways. Like, there was definitely some areas where I thought it could have gone way worse than it does. I watched The Majestic for the first time, Legally Blonde, Moulin Rouge, and Mulholland Drive, all for astrology in upcoming episode, listeners. But I wanted to take just a minute, though, and there was a quote in The Majestic that really has resonated super strong, and I think you will agree.
Okay.
And I should have probably mentioned this on the astrology recording, but
we can report Martin, back on that.
Right. Martin Landau says this, his character. Why would you want to stay at home and watch a little box? Because it's convenient? Because you don't have to get dressed up? Because you could just sit there? I mean, how can you call that entertainment alone in your living room? Where's the other people? Where's the audience? Where's the magic? I'll tell you, in a place like this, the magic. And he's talking about The Majestic, the theater. Yeah. And man, that hits hard right now.
No,
you know?
Because
that's it's I think you know, there are people who prefer staying at home and watching their movies and shows, but I've always been a fan of going to the theater. It's one of the few social going out things that I won't argue with. Like almost anything else, I'd be like, oh, I don't want to, but you want to go to the movie? Like, yes. The answer is yes.
Silly question. Yeah. Oh
my God. And it's so hits like right now. I'm going to end up turning this into a poster for my classroom because I love that quote so much, and I think it's so relevant. And even teaching film, while I don't get to teach film in a theater, I have a big, like a 50-inch, it's a Promethean board technically, but it's basically a TV. Yeah. It's a big HD TV. And that's, you know, I'm used to showing, and before that I had a projector in my classroom. So it was always like, we had a big screen and we have 15, 20 people. So we had an audience. Mm-hmm. And now that half of my students are online and half are, you know, some are on campus, but for that reason, I can't like show a movie. It just feels different. And it's that, you know, communal experience of sharing the entertainment. And at the same time, at the exact same time, because sure, you can watch it, I can watch it, and we can get together. And that's literally what we do for this podcast. Not discouraging that at all, but it is different getting to go and see it and having that conversation immediately after watching it.
Yeah. No, you're right. I generally go to the theater by myself. Not because I haven't got friends, but that's just what I want to do. So it can be impulse where there's been times when it's been 7 o'clock over here, you know, everything's settling down. Oh, actually, do you know what? I want to go watch a film. I've got an unlimited card. I'm going to go to the cinema. The film. What's coming on next? This. I did that with The Purge in 2013 or whenever it came out. I was sitting there, I was like, never heard of this film. It starts in 50 minutes. I'm off. I just went to watch The Purge, enjoyed it for the most part. I agree, but I also obviously do go with other people, and it's just a buzz, man. I've always said it on this show, is even just like walking into the theatre, suddenly like it is like walking into a different environment. The neon lights, the movie posters, you've got the buzz, the smell. Of popcorn, not like toilets, but of popcorn and hot dogs, whatever. And it's just like a good feeling about the place. And then when you obviously give your ticket in and you go to whatever, however they do it, and you're walking down the aisle, that's about to say the only aisle I'll be walking down for a while, walking down the aisle towards your screen, you get in, you've got the big screen, you've got the massive like coliseum of seats, and it's just like, yes, this is what it's all about. And you're all there for the same reason, and even if the film blows, it's still an experience. And even films like The Old Man and the Gun, which I know we both really dug, I saw that on a Monday afternoon, like 11 or Monday morning, 11 o'clock showing. There's like two other people in the theatre. This is great still. It didn't bother me. It's just great to be out there. Other people, I didn't speak to them, but it is that communal thing. And if you do like watching the films at home by yourself, then there's nothing wrong with that at all. That's, you just do whatever's comfortable. And I'm getting used to it at the minute, but I can't lie, man. I do miss the art. It's just also just good to get out as well. Like, just going out and doing stuff. I do miss that. And films, for the most part, were made to be seen on a big screen. So I hear that. And that quote will also remain prevalent, you know, touch wood, long after COVID has gone, because it will act as a reminder to these times you've been in now that, look, you know, when it's safe to do so, let's go out. Let's embrace what we had before and what we kind of took for granted. And let's just go out there, man, and remember that these places are there for us to celebrate and get together and share these good times or bad times if the film sucks. But, you know, let's not forget the good times when this is all over. Let's embrace them more than maybe we did before.
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, that's an option. That's the big fear, right? Is that, man, it's not going to be an option. And this is one of the first weeks of this show where we're not talking about the, like, that wasn't our headline. But here I am bringing it back up again. But I watching The Majestic, I had never seen it, and I didn't know. I knew it was about a theater, but I didn't know all the tie-ins to like the 50s and stuff like that were built into it. But that particular quote, because I was a little disappointed because it wasn't more about the theater. Like, I wanted it to be like only about The Majestic. Like, I need to watch Cinema Paradiso still. I've never seen that. That, I think, is what I thought Majestic was, what I know about that movie. But still, that quote, when he said it, it stopped. I was watching this while doing other stuff, and that quote like grabbed me. Like, it stopped. It made me stop what I was doing and like look at the screen. And his delivery of the line is really, really excellent. And it just echoes how I feel, but hadn't been able to articulate exactly, you know. And I just wanted to drop it here. I thought it was a good place to drop it.
Right, and I know the listeners are gonna appreciate that, and it probably have them yearning for the cinema / theatre or kino if you're European. Again, like, it now has me just sort of yearning for the good days of being able to go out again. But no, it's a fine selection there, my friend. And as soon as you said the Adventure Zone podcast, I'm thinking of Kenny Loggins' Danger Zone. As soon as you said, I was like, Top Gun came into my mind. Highway to the Adventure Zone, we should call it now. But my offerings are slightly more genre based. It's spooky season. It's Halloween coming up. I've been watching horror films. Partly for MPM, you know, the other shows I do. We next week we are talking about kind of like the first iterations of the Halloween franchise. So the original 78 film, the first Rob Zombie Halloween, and then the Blumhouse reboot or the continuation from 2018. So like these first kind of batch of continuations, redos, remakes. So I've been watching those. It's certainly a mixed bag of quality, and when the opinion comes out on it, I don't know. I Rob Zombie's Halloween, I text JB afterwards. I was like, this is just, I need to find an hour and 40 minutes of my life back. Didn't dig that. Halloween 78, I've never been overly up on it. I think it's a good film. I don't think it's excellent by any means. I think it's fine. Okay. There are moments in it, but summer is just, it is so of its time, but even then, it's some of the acting in it just takes me right out. Like Laurie's friend Linda, all she says is totally, and it really, really annoyed me. Some of the kills are great, and there's the scene, the classic scene of Laurie panicking in the bedroom, and then out of the shadow of the closet next to her, Michael Myers' mask just appears. That is incredible filmmaking. John Carpenter's score is wonderful. It's just like some of the things, I think it's a good film. But I don't hold it up as high as other staples in the horror genre. The 2018 reboot, I quite enjoyed that. It's got a lot of flaws, like killing podcasters. It's got a lot of flaws to it, but I enjoyed it.
I felt attacked.
Yeah. We take on Mike Myers and we destroy him. Yeah, I think I like the 2018 version. I like a lot more than the Rob Zombie version. But so I've been watching those. I went on to Shudder and I was looking for, I think it's Saturday night. I had a beer in the fridge because I'm a hardcore, like beer and horror film. So I went on Shudder and I was like, right, I'm going to have a look for like a highly rated film. Let's just pick one. And I chose upon Hell House LLC from 2015. It's a play on the found footage films where a group of people set up a haunted house for the public. So it's a little theme park, theme house. And it documents their travails and set it up because, as it would happen, they've just picked a haunted house to set it up in. And of course, things start to go bump in the night. And there's some good visual moments and scares in it, but overall, I wasn't a massive fan of it. But a lot of people seem to really like that film. I thought it was a bit, I wasn't so keen. But I also watched a anthology film which was released only last week called The Mortuary Collection. It's Clancy Brown stars as a morgue keeper, whatever the term is, who is interviewing a young lady who wants to take up the vacant position in the mortuary. And he's telling a variety of stories. And I had a really good time with this film. I thought it was really good fun. Different. There's four or five stories. All different in tone and where they go. There's a couple of moments where you're kind of like, geez, and looking away. I can't say what happens. It's good fun. I enjoyed it. It's good fun, but there's also some good moments of like terror, tension, atmosphere. Got some good little twists in it. I would recommend The Mortuary Collection. It seems to be getting fairly good buzz. A few people have said it wasn't for them, but the most people I'm seeing are really digging this. So if you have a Shudder subscription, The Mortuary Collection, check it out. And I've also been checking online on Marvel Unlimited and been rereading the Marvel Star Wars line from 2015.
I was wondering what that was. I'm like, what? Did he have like a stroke? What is Marvel Star
Marvel
Wars?
Star Wars? What's going on with this, Disney? No, it's the Marvel Star Wars line, a comic line, for Star Wars sessions for my Patreon show I do each month. We both have a solo show. And this month, I'm kind of revisiting that line, those 75 issues, and basically in a half an hour segment, what did I think about it, reviewing it, not issue by issue, God no, but kind of like some of the arcs, was it as good as people think it is? Is it as bad as people say it is? You know, it's set between episodes 4 and 5. Did they cram too much utter dross in there? We'll have to see. But so I've been rereading those. I've read them all before. Thank God for Marvel Unlimited as well, because I haven't got the money to buy the amount of comic books that they put out. And it's not just Star Wars. I mean, you know that it's not just one line. There's various lines, and then sometimes they cross over. So you're reading Star Wars, and then that crosses over with the Vader line, which also crosses over with Dr. Aphra. So before you know it, you've got to buy 3 1 week, and it's... But Marvel Unlimited has been a massive boom for me, so I've just been able to sit down, read them like every comic was intended to be read on my computer screen. But I recommend it unless you really are a collector, and I do prefer the feeling of it in my hands. But unless you're devout, it's physical media, digital media. Check out these, and the comicsology is the same as well. Check them out; I think they're really well worth it. But pretty much horror films and 75 issues of Marvel Star Wars for me, man.
Yeah, that is a series I've been wanting. Actually, even the current stuff that they're doing, I've heard is really, really good. I have a former student who he buys the physical copies, and then he gives me the digital codes because he doesn't like care
nice
as much. So I have been using those, and not that he doesn't care, but you know, there's no resale value for the digital books versus he's getting them anyway, so he tosses them to me, and I haven't read them yet, but I've been like collecting them and putting the codes in, and like, okay, one day I'm going to dive in on these. I used to, like, back when the New 52 dropped in DC, I was really actively buying and reading comics, and it got to be overwhelming because of what you said. Like especially as a Batman fan, so many books are attached to Batman that if you weren't reading all of them, you would miss parts of the story. And like,
yeah, it's clever. It's clever how they do it, but
it's cruel. Yeah. It's cruel is the word you're looking for. because there's just too many. And then at some point I got where I was just like, I couldn't focus to read enough. Where I was just like, I would sit to read and I would just be like, this feels more like a chore now. And so, yeah. I've stopped and I did, when the pandemic first started, I was like looking for anything to distract myself. And so I signed up for like the Comixology like free trial, and it's really cool, except I feel like they do the old school, like what we were told drug dealers did, like the first one's free. Like they'll give you like the first graphic novels included with Unlimited, but then nothing else was. So like I read The Boys, because I was watching the series at the time. And then, only the first one was free, and then everything else you'd have to buy. And I'm like, well, that's not fair, because you hooked me. I want to read the rest of the books, but I also don't have the money to buy the rest of the books. So that's why I was signed up for the Unlimited thing.
How they get you, man? Yeah. That's why I generally used to buy the trade paperbacks. I love Star Wars. Unless I really wanted to read like week on week, month on month, or fortnightly, whatever, I could just wait for the trade paperback. But I only decided to do this particular subjects like a week ago. I was like, crap, now I've got to reread them all. So, and I didn't have time to really go out and search for the trade paperback. I didn't want to wait for it. If anyone knows me, I'm very impulsive. If I get the idea in my head, I have to do it now. I have to do it then. So I can't wait a day or two for Amazon to deliver this. I need to get on Marvel Unlimited now and read it. But, you know, I will get them eventually, because when I ship up and ship out and get a bigger place and more room to store my geeky stuff, then I will, you know, endeavor to kind of start collecting some of these, because they're a good read. You know, it's up and like all comic book arcs and stories, there's ups and there's downs, but you know, if that's what you like I like Star Wars, like you like Batman and that, I'm gonna collect them, man. So, but I'd recommend reading them. But so that's pretty much what I've been doing this week. It's pretty much horror week, and I imagine next week will be similar. We're dabbled in with a few more astrology films like yourself this month. But you mentioned The Boys. I haven't seen it. I want to watch it. Mm. Have you seen the second season?
I've seen the first three episodes of the second season, and it's no criticism to the show that I haven't finished it. I decided I wanted to wait for all of them to drop, and then I just haven't made it back. I think all of them dropped two Fridays ago, and I've not made it back to the show just yet. I am going to finish it off. I really love season one. Like, I thought season one was great. I'm a big, big proponent for Carl Urban. Dude needs to get more work. You know, and he's so good on the show. And honestly, the whole cast is pretty great. But he's like the name that I was already familiar with before watching. But yeah, I've been really, really enjoying it. And I want to finish season two. I've heard mostly positive things about it. It is, it's the Watchmen on like another, like the Watchmen meet, I don't know, Deadpool meet like Ultraviolence. Like it's super like, violent, but
I've heard
it's definitely engaging, and it's cynical and nihilistic, which I often like that type of storytelling. Like I love the Coen brothers, I like noir, you know, so it kind of hits.
I need to watch it. Again, John knows, and most of you know, I'm really bad at streaming. It's not TV anymore, but just stream. I'm really bad at watching streaming stuff. Give me The Mandalorian in a week's time, I'll be up every morning watching that, or watching the screeners or whatnot. Also, that another look at The Mandalorian dropped today. Looking good. We're getting a bit more story coming out. I'm excited, but I would like to go and watch The Boys. But now I know that both seasons are out in full, I can just look to binge watch it.
Yep, and I think they have committed to a season three though, so know that going in, you'll have to.
Heard this as well, so I know. I know like the characters, or know of them. I've seen them. I kind of know their names or a few memes, but. And I've heard like certain episodes, like one set in an airplane, is apparently bonkers. But I need to watch it. And I will actually sit down one day and watch The Boys, and I will give the BAMP the exclusive on what I think about it. But I mean, I've heard that show is bloody awesome, but it's not as bloody awesome as this show. But staying bloody awesome is tough. You've seen John; he's a king. You've seen me; I'm okay. But in order to stay at these levels, we have to. Keep it bloody awesome all the time, and you know, we have to change up our regime week to week. So JB, in the last 7 days, how have you been staying bloody awesome?
Well, I I have not been to the gym since the pandemic started in at late, well, started here back in late March. Mostly, I think I'd gone when it first reopened. I did go on the treadmill one day, but I was too stressed out, so I haven't been back. But I have been working out, but I've not like, I wasn't sure if I was getting as much of a workout as I needed with my home stuff. And so I went back, I ordered, two new masks from a notable, athletic gear company, they're supposed to be like sweat resistant and they have like the moisture wicking and they're designed for working out. And I have to say, I really like them. They work very well for that cause, especially because I sweat a lot. Like, I am that type of person when I'm working out, I sweat a lot. So like, it's a regular fabric mask, the fabric mask would be nasty. So like, I needed something that wasn't going to feel nasty while I was wearing it. And I'm really happy with the mask so far. My gym is open 24 hours. So I've been trying to go at weird times, to avoid crowds. So far, I've only had to share the gym with one other person at a time. Unfortunately, each time they're not wearing masks. But we are staying far, far apart. And they're not there the whole time I'm there. So like, I'm almost done. They show up or I walk in and they're about to leave. So like, I've managed to mostly get the gym to myself. And I will say that I was correct. I was so sore. After, even though, again, I have not stopped working out this whole time. Like, I've been working out at 6 days a week, you know, running / you know, doing some weights at home, but my weights are very limited here. Mm-hmm. And I hit the gym real hard, thinking that I was still in the same shape that I was last time I was at the gym. So I'm like, I'll throw the same weights on. And then the next day I was like, oh my God, I can't move. I
can't walk.
So I had to drop some, especially on my legs. I was like doing the decline leg press at like 270 pounds. And I did, that's what I threw on. And I did 270. I did it, but I could barely, like, my legs were like wobbly the next day. So I had to drop it to 200 for now. To be fair though, I also weigh less now. Like, so like when I started at like 270, I probably weighed like 280, and now I weigh 240. So I was like pressing more than I actually have to support on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So my legs were like, maybe not. Maybe you don't need to do this much weight. So
settle down. Yeah.
Yeah. But the new mask definitely made me feel a little more confident. I am wiping down all the equipment before and after I work out. And I've also built my routine. It's a full body routine. It takes about 40 minutes. And I try to minimize movement as far as like from station to station. So like, if I can do two exercises on one thing, like the decline leg press, I'm doing a press, but I'm also doing my calf workout on the same machine, so that I don't have to, like, one, I don't have to dirty multiple machines for my sake. And also I am in control of this space a little longer so that I'm getting a lot done in a confined area. So that's, I'm trying to do the gym safely. I'm still nervous. And of course, because people around me are not taking it as seriously, it makes me even more nervous. But a big chain gym just opened, had its grand opening 2 days ago. So I'm hoping that a lot of people from my gym, which is smaller, but still a chain, but I'm hoping that more people will flock over to the big one. It's also, the big one is $30 less a month.
You may see a decline in footfall in your gym.
Right. And I want to go to the new gym because it's cheaper and I am a teacher and I make no money, but I want the freedom of my gym. So that's what I'm leaning towards. Like, please, everybody, don't, not enough people leave that my gym ends up having to shut down, but everybody leave that enough that I have my space, you know, cause I will find out tonight. I'm going to be going to the gym. It's 5:40 in my time right now. I'll be going to the gym in about 4 hours, hoping that it's empty. So fingers touch crossed, wood. Everybody.
Touch wood. Nice. I need to do that again because my my lockdown diet has gone out the window somewhat, but I will get it back again. But the gyms around here are kind of, they're open, but I haven't got a membership. I cancelled it a while ago. I need to get back on it again. But for the same reasons as you, it's just, it's a bit sketchy going. And then it just because you never know. It's like, is that sweat on the bike or is that where somebody sprayed it?
Point out though that you just said that about like canceling, because I had my gym membership was suspended throughout the quarantine, and then at the end of August it was about to renew, and they're still letting everyone, you could suspend it again, but you had to do it in 2 month increments, right? So I suspended it for August and September, and I called a couple days before October 1st and asked them to suspend it, and she's like, okay, you're all set. Here comes the payday and I get the money taken out. And I should have called and said, hey, I want a refund. I asked to suspend it. Instead, I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to order these masks and I'm going to go to the gym. So
you did the right thing, I think, in the end of the day. In terms of your motivation, again, Cineworld charged me the other day, and Cineworld, as far as I'm aware, aren't open. So I need to sort that out as well.
Yeah, I need to check that.
Yeah, I need to do that. That 20 quid would come in handy right now for pizza and beer, probably. No, for healthy stuff. I've been doing, it's kind of similar, going on country walks. It's not quite as romantic as it sounds, but just making the most of the beautiful British countryside fields and that. We've got some lovely country parks around here before lockdown part two hits, because Wales is shutting down again pretty much. And that's a long way. That's four or five hours away, but they're pretty much shutting down from Friday. You know, if it's not essential, you don't go out again. Whereas it hasn't hit England yet, but who knows? Lockdown part two is probably on its way, because people aren't taking it seriously. And if you're not, shame on you. But no, just going on country walks, just putting welly boots on, as we call them over here, putting the boots on and just going for walks. I've been taking my daughter out. She's four. She calls it an adventure, you see. So I was like, well, if that passes as an adventure, then I'm the best dad in the world. So let's go on another adventure to a big, the big field. It's forests and fields, and there's deer in enclosures and running free as well. There's play parks for kids as well. So there's plenty. I don't just drag her to a field and have her try and traverse cow crap. But no, so that was fun. Took her around there, and she's kicking mud at me all day, and we saw some deer running free. And to my four-year-old, her exact words were, "My dreams have come true." Which to me was like the beauty and innocence of a child. I was like, you know what? You can those deer are going to think about you tonight when you go to sleep. So if you go to sleep very quickly tonight, they'll dream of you. Black when they go to sleep anyway. But no, but going out as much as possible, just for walks, even if it's like half an hour, but mainly for an hour and a half, 2 hours. It's good. You know what I mean? Good for the mental health as well to get out. It was just by myself, put the headphones in, listen to some tunes. Get some exercise, some fresh air at the same time. And it's good. It's good to do that. We've said that a few times recently in the last few months. A lot of our bloody awesome mentality is going out and sort of maintaining your mental health. And don't mean to turn it into a preachy session, but it's very important for all of us to do that, dude. It's, you know, and that's what's working for me. And, you know, that some days are better than others, but being able to go out and do that is pretty swell. And then knowing that every Tuesday night is book time. Make everything better, plus astrology and everything else. So, but yeah, basically going out, stretching the legs, getting some fresh air, listening to some music before, hopefully that won't happen, but in case, you know, lockdown happens and we're not allowed out again. So yeah, pretty similar to you, is the sort of getting out and getting healthy again. It's how we've been staying bloody awesome. And I'd love to know how you guys out there are staying bloody awesome, because you might give us some tips as well. And but that's our episode of the BAMP of the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast for this week. I hope you enjoyed our review of Nocturne. If you agree or disagree, do let us know what you think. We'll give those details very shortly. But next week, we're coming at you with a review of The Witches, the Anne Hathaway-led, Robert Zemeckis-helmed, Roald Dahl-written remake of that early 90s film with Angelica Houston. But Anne Hathaway stepping in this time. So we're going to be reviewing that as our main topic next week. And I mentioned the socials. If you want to get in contact with us, and please do, we love hearing from you. On Twitter, at BAMP_podcast, BAMP_podcast. JB, on Instagram, where are we?
We are at the Bloody Awesome Movie Pod. In my head, I was like, I'll say the to make it sound more official. And I'm like, no, it's going to sound like it's part of the name. It's not part of the name.
We'll get Bloody Awesome people. Movie Pod. We couldn't find you on there. Facebook, just search for Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast and you'll find us on there. And John, if people want to find you online and your variety of work, where can they?
You can find me at BurkeReviews.com and on all the social media at BurkeReviews, including Letterboxd, Instagram, and Twitter.
Yep, and you can find Movie Club and all of John's podcasts on all of the podcast providers, and Movie Astrology, mine and John's semi-regular movie history show. Find it on all the podcast providers. You can find me whatiwatchtonight.co.uk and whatiwatchtonight across Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd also. And if you do have a spare minute, please do consider leaving us a good review and a rating on your podcast provider of choice. It boosts the show up the rankings even further. It makes us feel good. It helps the show grow, and we like hearing from you guys whenever possible. So if you do have a spare minute, we would absolutely love and appreciate your time for a rating and a review. But on that, as always, guys, do remember to stay bloody awesome
and keep watching movies.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Blood, 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 bloody, blood, 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 bloody.